Welcome to the Today's Leader podcast. Building tomorrow's best leaders, today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul, I see you.
All right, John, let's finish. Coach Cole.
And it's my pleasure to welcome to the Today's Leader podcast, Building Tomorrow's Best Leaders Today. Please welcome the author of Get Promoted, What You're Really Missing at Work That's Holding You Back. Please welcome Michael Wenderoff. How are we today, Michael?
I'm doing great. Thank you for the invitation, Tony.
It's my pleasure. You're joining us from Spain and you've got an American accent and you've got a varied sort of a background. So, Michael, please share your story with our listeners.
Sure. I'm an executive coach and my focus is helping emerging and inspiring leaders ethically leverage power and politics to ascend. So I have arrived at coaching after a 20 plus year career around the globe, China, US, Europe. I'm multicultural, multilingual, and so I bring that to bear in my coaching.
Okay, so what took you from the States to China?
Well, this was, we have to wind the clock back several decades. But I think it's one of those things is, as all of us, you know, think about our career and the shifts in our career of where is the next thing happening? Where are there going to be skills and areas that I can grow? And so early 90s, and this is late 80s, China was emerging. It was an interesting place, and that's where I went.
Okay. So share a little bit about what the book's about. Get Promoted, What You're Really Missing at Work That's Holding You Back.
So I wrote my book because I have, and if we look out there, there's a lot of aspiring and great leaders who hit ceilings. They get stalled. They get frustrated, they feel like they're being overlooked, and they don't have the impact they want.
Yeah.
And often, a lot of times, a lot of them are saying, hey, I'm doing all the things that I'm actually told, or the leadership industry tells us. So I wanted to challenge what I saw as some misnomers in the industry, or things that get misapplied, that hold a lot of really good people back. And particularly when a lot of clients come to me and say, you know what, I'm doing those things, but look at who is getting ahead, rising up in the organization or having an outdoor influence. They are doing nothing from the leadership playbook that everyone touts. They do a lot of things that I don't like. And so we can talk about, you know, what the implication that has. So I wanted to kind of lay out the bare truth about what the actual evidence shows of what helps people rise and help them have more impact.
Yeah. It's an interesting scenario a lot of leaders find themselves in with organizations. There's usually a corporate culture that they're involved in some way. They either fit in with the culture or they clash with the culture. But the word politics keeps coming up more and more with the leaders that I work with. How do they navigate the politics? Is that part of what you work with leaders as well? And is that part of what you navigate through your book?
Yes, that's a central part. There's two big pieces here, which is navigating politics, which can have lots of meanings, and also navigating power dynamics.
Okay.
So these two elements, which when most people say it, negative associations run to your mind, but they are actually understanding, being able to navigate or manage those really effectively are really the key driver. And this is a central part in my book. They are the key driver that takes you into the upper echelons and makes you highly effective.
Okay.
Doesn't mean you have to be evil or Machiavellian about those things, but you really need to understand it both to protect yourself, but also so you can harness those things to be effective.
Yeah. Politics is one that just people bang their heads against in so many ways. And we hear all the negative side of the politics. We'll hear old boys club or the school tie or, you know, that scenario time and time again. But is there a positive way for someone to A, acknowledge that there's politics within the organization, and what are some of the first steps that they should be taking to help them navigate, now I've used that word a couple of times, navigate their way through that?
Yeah. So whether we, first of all, have to reframe this as positive is a big point I will put out there. I think a lot of leadership is not comfortable. Sometimes we sugarcoat things. It is a lonely, tough place. And so one thing is you just have to realize it is like the air that you breathe, and it is there. And so if you ignore it or you put your head in the sand, you're really not going to get any place. And so this is what derails a lot of leaders. But I would say, to your point about how do you get started with this, I mean, one real simple way, and it's an exercise I have in the book, is have people kind of write down the associations that come with politics or power, but we'll still focus on politics here. And to do what I call, and we as coaches do, is kind of the reframe. How might you think about these things in a different way, right? Yeah. Versus kind of brown-nosing someone. This could be, you know, understanding their point of view, looking for what they're strong at, making them feel good about themselves, right? So, you know, so we can actually have a dialogue. So there's different ways, and I think the first step to doing this is, one, realizing it's there, but then two is starting to do that reframe. And also to be a little non-judgmental. So what I said about, if you look at all the people in your organization, cultures are different, who is rising? And you may have negative associations. This person is always networking. This person kind of shows up with a lot of confidence when I know they don't know exactly what they're talking about. So things like that, and to reframe that to say, you know, hey, this person is building strong relationships. They know where resources lie. They're aligning with other people's agenda. They are exuding confidence to inspire others. So if you can kind of reframe that and see how that might be effective and how you might, I dare say, learn from it, then I think we can start to move forward.
So instead of judging someone who's moving through the corporate ladder or being a getting some positive movement in their career, instead of a leader judging that and saying, why isn't that me and what are they doing, and to actually look at it and actually look at some of those attributes that they're showing, like building rapport, building relationships, and those other things that you were talking about, to actually then maybe do a skills audit on themselves? Is that part of the process to see how can I be doing that? And I guess you use the word brown nose, and time again, that's what leaders think is the difference, that they see they're judging someone else as being the brown nose, when fundamentally, and that may be a very shallow perspective, but fundamentally there's more to it, isn't there?
Yeah, I think we sometimes reduce things, particularly in the Twitterverse and the social media now, to these very short, shallow ideas, which is, you know, why we need to have these deeper conversations and think of the nuances, the gradients here around some of these terms. And brown nosing carries all of these negative connotations with it. And it can be very fake, but if you start moving along the spectrum, you can find ways to make that, you know, effective.
Same with, you mentioned power dynamic, and, you know, often when, especially today's world, the power seems to have more and more of a negative connotation, and within organizations, like as a leadership coach, I prefer talking about influence as opposed to power. So help me understand the concept of power dynamics and how leaders can build a career with a greater understanding of that.
Yeah. So again, power dynamics are all around you. And if we also kind of ratchet this out to kind of big picture, a lot of discussion around diversity, equity, inclusion, and we can't have an honest conversation about that or even be effective in making things better unless you really acknowledge power dynamics at work. So, I mean, this is something I want to put, it is there, you have to acknowledge it. And I deliberately do talk about power. That is what is in my book. Because it is such an effective force that helps people get things done, also helps leaders, you know, make things move, because oftentimes change and other things are hard. And so you need to think about the different levers you've got. Mm. I think influence is related. They are kind of cousins, but yeah. power has that very negative association because of the way, like we said, some of these leaders may use it. But if you think about it very simply, and I'll just leave it at this comment, we can dive deeper, is that power is nothing more than a force. And if you think of it, again, in these kind of neutral terms, and you look up the academic definitions, not the popular ones you see, you know, out in the popular press, it is simply a force. So how you use it and what ends you're seeking to achieve can be done in different ways. So power can be used, I hate to kind of make it simple here, but for good as well, not just to kind of burn things down.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that probably wish they had some power so that they could use it for good. But fundamentally, there are power dynamics at work. And sometimes that power dynamic, well, for I would imagine for a large majority of companies, that power dynamic is what creates success within that organization. And for a leader to be able to actually work within that power dynamic is actually going to be a positive for them. So what are leaders missing when, and what can be holding a leader back and that's going to help them, the emerging, the aspiring leader, to take the next step in their career?
Yeah, so I start off the book talking about some of these myths that hold people back. Mm. And, you know, we've touched on some of them, but I'll highlight them. Is one is that kind of power and politics are evil, or that I can't do it, or it only comes from position.
Yeah.
And again, the power and politics research would show that these are the things as you move up, because as you move up, you're working through other people.
Yep.
And so it's necessary to have that interpersonal influence, those aspects of power to help you get things done. It's much different than, you know, early in your career where individual contributor and you're doing things. And people, frankly, you know, what's holding them back is that belief. But then that's also reinforced, I think, to the point we raised earlier, by a lot of the leadership literature. Yeah. Which, you know, the currency here is, you know, we're trying to do better things, but then, I was authentic, I was a servant, I was nice, and I got walked over. So you have to take the strong points of that, but manage that carefully, because in organizations, a lot of people won't have purity of intent. You have to be careful as you walk into some of these dynamics. People will take credit for your work. People are having the meeting before the meeting. And so it behooves you to really understand and managing those things. So if you hide from that, you don't engage it, then you're going to get hurt. So understanding is a key step, and then thinking about how you can leverage it, because there is a playbook, and I break that down into different pieces of what helps you build power.
Excellent. I interviewed a gentleman called Michael Moore, and he runs another really successful podcast, the No Bullshit Leadership podcast. And he's written a book, of course, called No Bullshit Leadership. And one of the things that really I took away from speaking with him, and similarly when I'm speaking with you now, Michael, is he talks about the delivery of value. So as a leader, a leader's role is to deliver value. And he's got a model on how you ascertain, you know, where you're delivering value, who you're delivering value, but stakeholders, clients, and ultimately as a leader in a project, you deliver value. And that's fundamentally a bit of a shift for me, because I'm a Maxwell leadership coach, and the concept with Maxwell is to add value. And so for me, I had to do a bit of a step back and think, okay, they're not mutually exclusive areas. I can still add value to deliver value. And it's a really similar thing to what you're talking about. I mean, at the end of the day, leaders have to get results, don't they?
Yeah, it's about being effective. And so, you know, if you want to get things done, you want to move the needle, whether you are, you know, operating part of the ship or you're steering the whole ship, you really need to think about these parts and who your constituents are. And so this is the hard part of leadership. It is the tough part. You don't necessarily always want everyone on the ship. You need to make changes at times. Yeah. You need to instill confidence in those who are around you. And so these are parts that, you know, you need to lean into, to kind of use the popular phrase.
Yeah, a lot of people like to think of leadership development as being a little bit warm and fluffy, and that we're sitting around a campfire singing Kumbaya. But at the end of the day, leaders are there for a reason, and that's to ultimately provide results or deliver value or add value or those sorts of concepts. So, who should read your book?
So there are two large groups that really should read my book. I'd say the first one is aspiring leaders who are kind of in the middle and senior parts of their career, who are looking to make more impact, but they feel like, I'm feeling kind of stalled where I'm at, or I'm overlooked, or there's other people who are moving past me. Oftentimes I get people who have, I should have gotten that promotion. What's going on? I see someone else who I feel is less competent rising. So those who are frustrated that or want to have more impact than they're currently having. And then the second group are those who are moving up. But you know that old saying, right? What got you here won't get you there. And have this nagging feeling that, hey, now I've upped my game. I'm playing with very savvy group that I've got to work with. And I know I'm missing some piece, but I'm not sure what that is. Right? When you move into VP land, that becomes the area of, I got to be at the top of my game, or you've got a stretch role, right, that your mentor puts you in. So those two groups would really benefit from this, particularly if they're adhering to things they think the industry says and I'm doing and it's not working. It's not happening.
When I look at the cover of your book, you've made a very clear statement, and it's a very intentional statement, I would believe, for executives who want to ascend. Now, ascend is not a word that, many people would ultimately use. I mean, you would hear leaders talk about climbing the ladder, getting ahead, taking the next step. Ascend is a very intentional word that you've used to describe those leaders. Why was that? I'm intrigued as to why that's the word you chose.
Yes, I'm very careful the words, and Tony, it's fantastic that you picked that out. So I'd love to explain. I chose ascend because it has a wider definition, right, versus climbing the ladder. And part of that, right, to ascend, literally, you are moving up like a mountain. Okay, so there is this part. A lot of executives come to me because they want to get promoted, the title. But the ascend there also has this much, broader definition of how do I move to the next level? And that, when you really dig down to it, for most of us and most of my clients, is about how do I make more impact? How do I get more of the things I want done for my organization, for myself, for my team? And so there is this kind of lighter side of ascending of how do you have more fulfillment and impact? And that's really central to my clients. And I think most of us out there, want to feel valued. That's why most people leave companies. I don't feel appreciated or valued, or I'm not making an impact here. It's frustrating. So they go somewhere else.
So it's a much broader concept that you want to drive within leaders, that it's not just about the next step or the corporate ladder. It's more. And I can certainly pick up that perception. Michael, who's been one of your influences or the influence for you in your journey?
Throughout my journey, I would say, and I'm not going to name a specific person here, but I go back to, I've had very fortunate to have a lot of very strong bosses that I have worked for throughout my career. And I say that word strong because some of them were excellent, who I learned a lot of things from, and some were not so excellent, which you also, to this point about being non-judgmental, learn from. But what's been most valuable and inspirational about that, again, if you have this kind of learning mindset, is like, what can I learn from this person? And oftentimes, having conversations with them later in my career, as to why did you do certain things like that at the time, right? Why did I not get that promotion? And there was a very good reasons, right, as we talked through some of those things. So being able to learn from those individuals, right, when they were tough, when they did certain stuff that didn't seem to make sense, learning from those individuals. And those were across the globe, men, women. I've been pretty blessed to have a lot of those great leaders in my life.
Excellent. What about our journeys are never like a straight line to success. They're punctuated by peaks and, you know, they're decimated in some ways in some of the troughs that we encounter. So walk me through your relationship that you may have with failure, you know, those times that we didn't quite hit the mark or that we, you know, we just failed. How's your relationship with failure?
Oh, yeah. So we have all failed. And when you talk to a lot of people, we've had ours. And that's where I see most of the growth actually come from. Right. Mm-hmm. As long as it isn't totally devastating, and most failure in our mind is more devastating than it actually is.
Yeah.
But what, you know, you can learn from it. And I would say this, I have reinvented. I've had about five careers, different industries, different countries around the world. I wouldn't say that's always the best strategy if you're trying to move in one particular industry or organization. But what that taught me was how to quickly reinvent. And to the point we're talking about power is when you move to a new country, new industry where you don't have a network, how do you quickly start to build that? And I would say in some of those troughs, when I was making the transitions and each time the trough got a little less deep, was to say, man, I've gone and talked to people, gotten the door slammed in my face. I could look at that as failure. And that hits a lot, right? When you reach a certain level in your career and then people are like, I don't know where you worked. I don't recognize that school that you were at. Is how do you retell your story? You get better at that. How do I make a connection with people quickly? What do they see as credible? And so all of those pieces, I think, which were when the door gets slammed in your face, I'd say that's was felt like failure. But what do you learn from it? And then you iterate to move forward. For reinvention, that was very helpful.
Yeah. Now that you've got your book out, what's been a book that's had really big impact for you?
I would say, well many, but I would turn the clock back more than 20 years. And, you know, Malcolm Gladwell's Tipping Point. And I would say this book was influential to me on two levels.
Yep.
Okay. One of it was the actual content of it. Okay. The idea that little things can make a small difference. It's what we're looking for as coaches when you're in marketing, right? What's the lever that can move things? And so it was useful on that idea of kind of his unpacking social science evidence and linking it to a larger story that's useful. But it's that second part of, it felt to me like a new genre of books in the way that I also like to write, of taking very good social science evidence, making it accessible, wrapping it in a story or stories that people can relate to so that it can be used. Because I feel like a lot of great research has been done, but it never sees the light of day.
Yeah.
So Gladwell's book was very influential. I spent a long time in marketing from that perspective.
Yeah.
Little things making a difference. But second, that whole genre really inspires me. And I think he was one of the first to do it really well.
Excellent. The vision, what does that look like for you moving forward?
Well, my vision and why I wrote the book is how do we get better leaders? Not the leaders that we sadly, more often than not, get, right? Mm. Narcissistic CEOs run their company into the ground, damage lots, but walk off with golden parachutes. Yeah. And, you know, but they do a lot of things right if we can be non-judgmental. They figure ways to get into those positions of power. They do everything that's in the social science, you know, canon that shows how you affect that. How do we get the kind of very smart, hardworking, ethical, strong people who a lot of whom are sidelined? They're not in the game.
Mm.
And so that's my vision of the future, is how do we get to that point? And I think part of it is that group that's stalled or on the sideline needs to better understand how the game is being played, and they can do it without being unethical.
Mm. Bit of a segue into my next question, I guess. What are some of the traits that you see leaders need to have today?
A lot of interpersonal savviness. And so this is the part around being able to read the moment and being able to read the room and knowing what's called for, right? I've been impacted a lot from situational leadership. I think that is a very good model in terms of thinking about what do you need to do to show up to the particular situation?
Yeah.
And I think that's the top skill, right? Leaders being able to read that and being able to either harness it or not walk into a landmine. How to kind of reframe, steer the ship, get the right people on board to navigate those moments.
Yeah. There are many times in my career just hearing that word savviness, and I'm just thinking, geez, if only I had it in that occasion.
Yeah, I mean, hindsight is always 20/20, but that's that point of, right? You pick up, you learn from it, and then every situation is going to be different, but you can start to see patterns, and that's what's really valuable, so that you're going in with the deck stacked more in your favor.
Yeah. It's trying to get the benefit of hindsight before you actually need it. I think that's the real key. And, you know, obviously I talk a lot about helping leaders prepare their skill set before they actually need it. So whether it's crisis leadership or building and developing their own resilience, and we do it bit by bit and small steps at a time, But just that savviness just really connected with me. I've made some horror blues around not being savvy enough to understand the dynamics of that particular situation. And it's usually revolving around a person who's a number of steps above where my role was within the organization. And if ever there was a time machine and go back and utilize some different methodology, might have been of benefit. So, and I'm sure there's a lot of leaders listening that thinking, yep. So if they can get that from your book, I think that's going to be fantastic. Michael, how can people connect with you?
Yeah, so the primary means is through my website, which we can put in the notes, but it's Chang Wenderoth, C-H-A-N-G. WENDEROTH.com. And then my primary mechanism out on social media is through LinkedIn. So to follow me, connect with me there.
Awesome. I'll make sure both of those links are in the show notes. Michael, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today. And thank you for investing in today's leaders.
And thank you, Tony, for inviting me. Pleasure to be here.
If you're looking to build better leadership skills, check out the Today's Leader website at todaysleader.com.au. We really are driving a leadership revolution to build tomorrow's best leaders today. Today's Leader is a collective, the mindset to make a difference, the ability to create an impact. Think and Grow Business hosts our Today's Leader Mastermind. Think and Grow Business, where we focus on personal, professional, and business growth. Book your free 30-minute discovery call right from the homepage at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au. Don't forget, wherever you are standing stronger, braver, and wiser. Don't forget the golden rule. Don't be an arsehole. I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.